Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is July 13th, 2013, and this is episode 32, a look at the Ouya.
Oh yeah!
Oh yeah!
So, you know, it's, delightful to be here with you all out there in internet radio land for another full episode so soon. Obviously this was a little bit unplanned, but having finally gotten my Ouya in the post, I felt like it was high time to put my money where my mouth is and show this little guy the same level of attention that we try to give all of the consoles here on the SS Game Buoy. And, yeah, I kind of do realize that this statement's going to come back and bite me on the ass when the bone comes out, if I don't buy one, you know, day one. But, oh well! In any event, with our goal for the day stated, let's get this party started. We have a couple of follow-ups. Sidekick, would you take this first one?
Sure. So this is kind of sad news. We talked about earlier this year that Impossible Studios was shut down, and Infinity Blade Dungeons has now been shut down as well. So that's very unfortunate to hear.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of bummed to hear that.
It looks like it was going to be a cool game, but I guess there's not much we can do now.
Yeah, well, you know, we've talked a couple times about the troubled development of this game, and I just think it's a real shame that, you know, after putting quite a bit of money into that, presumably at least, after all these years, it's just not even going to see release. It's just dead. That sucks.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, that was kind of right in the midst of all of the doom and gloom of THQ and stuff, so it was really sad to see Impossible.
Doomy doom.
Are you being Invader Zim right now?
Excuse me, that was Gurr.
Well, obviously.
You fail it.
That was my soccer mom moment. Are you being Invader Zim right now? So I'd like to take this one if it's okay.
Yeah, no, you can.
DuckTales Remastered is coming on August 13th. But not on what? Xbox Live Arcade.
What are you doing?
I was singing that follow-up to the DuckTales theme.
Look at your life.
For those of you who are just like,
look at your life. Look at your choices.
For those of you who didn't understand what I said because I was singing it so beautifully and you were distracted by my charming voice.
That's not a thing. Like, I am 100% okay, certain that anyway, that didn't happen.
DuckTales Remastered got a release date announcement finally, so
oh, yeah?
Super exciting.
Woo!
Hey, you don't get to do that. It'll be hitting August 13th, digital, obviously. And I'll tell you why I'm making that distinction. For PSN, Nintendo eShop on Wii U, and PC. And we don't exactly know why, but Xbox Live Arcade is not getting it until September 11th. It'll cost $14.99. And if you're interested in this sort of thing, on August 20th, there's going to be a boxed version for PS3. But it's not like the Super Luigi thing.
Yeah, the game's not on a disc. It's just like a download voucher, you know, like what Sony does with a lot of their HD ports or whatever, like the God of War Sagas set or whatever. So it just comes with a download voucher
and a free exclusive DuckTales pin.
Hey, that might be valuable in the pin trading circles.
It's probably not a Disney pin trading pin.
Well, that sucks. If you're a European listener, you can get it for PC on the 13th, PSN on the 14th, and Nintendo eShop for Wii U on the 15th. I'm not sure why they staggered it like that, but hey, at least you get it, like, not way later. So I'm super excited, obviously. I'm going to pick this up on August 13th for sure. And if you are super excited about this coming up, you can watch the Duckumentary videos on WayForward's site.
Excellent. Well, you know, following up on a game that I'm pretty excited to play, Scribblenauts Unmasked, which, as you may recall, is the Scribblenauts game that mines the lore and literature of the DC Universe, will be launching September 24th for the Wii U, Nintendo 3DS, and PC platforms. I'm super excited about this. You know, we talked about this some number of weeks ago. I couldn't even tell you when at this point. This game has, like, a crazy number of, like, even, like, 14 Superman variants. They're trying to be super inclusive, include basically, you know, every iteration of all these characters. And so I'm just, you know, I'm still holding my holding out my hopes for Vertigo characters.
Well, at least you'll probably be able to play as Cassandra Cain, Batgirl, right? That's the Batgirl you like, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
so.
Okay, good.
And I would have to expect so. I mean, if you can be 14 Supermans, it's going to be a real slap in the face if I can't be Cassandra Cain,
They're like, nope,
Batgirl.
Just Barbara Gordon.
Boo. Unfair.
More like Boo-bra Gordon.
Can you take this next one?
Yes. Kind of a follow-up on our Kickstarter.
Kickstarter!
From last week.
Stop.
Well, our Kickstarter conversation, not our Kickstarter. Which is coming soon, $50,000 stretch goals.
Yeah, doing this show is so expensive. We need a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. Well, speaking of a lot of money, Star Citizen has reached a goal of $14 million. That includes, I think, some PayPal money. So, you know, it's kind of like a Little Kim sort of deal.
Oh, man, they're the best video games sold on PayPal. And then PayPal will have to issue a press release being like, we're not a storefront, we're just a payment method. Because they actually did that to Lil' Kim.
I know.
But moving forward, this is not Lil' Kim Bowie.
You know, I think that the Kickstarter amount was just shy of the $14 million, and then PayPal brought in about another $200,000-$300,000, which is pretty great. You know, I think this is one of the highest, if not the highest, amount of funding on a Kickstarter game, but I could be totally wrong.
Yeah, I am certainly not familiar with any that you know, had higher amounts. Like, that's crazy. That's a lot of money.
We talked about like something like 9 million, or I don't remember which one we were talking about last week, but that's good for Star Citizen. You know, it looks good. Hopefully it will pan out to be an awesome game and not a flop.
And last, but most certainly not least, for our follow-ups today, with the release of Pikmin 3 in Japan this week, the Super Smash Bros. Website updated with its, you know, its standard new images from the game, new information about the game. And with this most recent update, we now have confirmed Captain Olimar as a returning challenger.
Yay!
So that's super exciting. I'm really excited about that. I like Olimar a lot in Smash Brawl. These new images of Olimar in the Wii U version of Super Smash Bros. He looks really good. The new model and the effects and everything all look really good. And
yeah.
It just looks great.
You know, it's interesting that in this iteration of the franchise that they're trying to scale down the roster a bit. Because if this had been, like, Brawl or something, you would probably have seen, like, the new captains that are going to be in Pikmin 3, but maybe there'll be assist trophies or something like that.
Yeah, or, you know, maybe we even still will see the new characters as well with the new Pikmin types that are in Pikmin 3.
I always love the Smash Dojo during the time before a new Smash game, because it's always so exciting to watch.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm glad you said that, because that brings us to a really interesting point that I want to hit here on air. I just want to sort of make it clear. We're going to talk about Smash Brothers a lot over the next year. I'm a huge fan of Smash Brothers and Smash Brothers Melee, and you know, Brawl's alright. So, we're going to talk about this a lot. Basically, anytime there is Smash Brothers news, we're going to talk about it on this show.
And when we only just, in our first fighting game episode, just got to Smash on our fighting games timeline, so we haven't even had the chance to talk about Melee yet.
I have an attitude about talking about Smash as a fighting game. But yeah, no, I mean, it's a fighting game. It is. It's just not what I think of when I think about fighting games. Like, but it is. I mean, dude, it's characters fighting.
So please look forward to it
but
on
yes.
Us fighting four-way.
Well, just please look forward to hearing a lot about Smash Brothers
well, yes,
over the next
that too.
Year. If you're out there and you have a Wii U, you better get ready for some online play with us, you know, a year from now. But Moving on, I think it's time to hit
news. 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 Oh my god, news. So, hey, bro. Do you play League of Legends?
Yeah, bro. I'm all about LOL, bro.
Are you a LOL pro, bro? Are you a LOL pro, bro?
So, I'm just gonna cut this off because I can't take you seriously right now.
Our first news story today is that the U.S. government has begun issuing visas to international League of Legends players, designating them professional athletes.
That was the point I was gonna get to, is that if you were a LOL pro, bro, then you'd be a pro athlete.
Oh, okay. That's actually not bad. Well played. But in any event, basically, you know, it does what it says on the tin. The United States government recognizes League of Legends pro players as professional athletes and awards visas to essentially work in the United States under that title, according to Riot Games esports manager Nick Allen.
Does that mean if I, like, wanted to join a hardcore raiding guild on WoW, like one of the ones that does world firsts and stuff, that I'd be a pro athlete?
I don't know if WoW players are considered pro athletes in the eyes of the U.S. government. That's really what the distinction here is, and why this is such an interesting news story, is that basically the U.S. government has looked at League of Legends play, high-level play, sort of the attention that this game gets among, you know, players and enthusiasts, and deemed that, like, yeah, no, this can be considered professional sport in the U.S. These people are professional players, they are athletes, and they can work here on a freaking visa.
That's interesting.
So it's kind of, yeah, it's kind of a big deal.
The whole esports phenomenon is kind of an interesting thing for me. Like, just the fact that, you know, people are like, I play StarCraft for money! But... yeah. And as far as WoW rating guilds go, let's be real, my DPS isn't high enough and I stand in the fire way too much. Right, Rob Roberts?
Girl, don't.
What? I'm just owning up to not being a pro raider.
So you know what I'm super excited about?
Angry Birds Star Wars prequel.
How very dare you. I wanted to say that.
That's our next news item, though.
Angry Birds Star Wars apparently has a sequel coming out based on the prequels that apparently we're going to be finding out more on July 15th. So probably by the time you're listening to this episode, you will know more about this game than I do right now. You should probably feel super proud about that.
Do you know what, though?
What?
It's Star Wars and a prequel, so do you know what that means?
No!
It means that Jar Jar Binks!
Oh, no.
That's very unpleasant.
Unless they just lampshade it all.
Yeah, actually, though, you know, given the sense of humor of the Angry Birds games, probably that's what's going to happen. So, you know, maybe it'll be like Jason X, and they'll be like, this sucks on so many levels!
Yep.
Sorry, I didn't really give you much to work with there. Why don't you take this next one for me?
So this is pretty controversial. And also on the World of Warcraft tip, patch 5.4 is currently on the public test realm, which for those of you who have, like, no real experience with MMOs, it just means that the latest update is being worked on, content update, and one of the things that was data mined and now confirmed by Blizzard is that there will be an in-game store, because what had happened is that data miners had found a potion or a flask that gives you 100% XP buff. And,
That's a lot of XP.
That's a lot of XP. And so people were like, oh, well, WoW's going free-to-play now, or having a freemium element or something. But, I mean, that's not confirmed at all, but,
No, we just know there's gonna be, a cash shop now.
One thing that is interesting is that it's launching in Asia because they use a different business model where you pay by the hour instead of, paying monthly fee, which is probably because in Asia a lot of the online gaming is done in, like, internet cafes.
My understanding is that their numbers in Asia, in particular, on steep declines.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I mean, that used to be a huge community for them. So, you know, a lot of mixed feelings from the WoW community in general, but, you know, we'll just have to see how it plays out. I personally have purchased pets and mounts and all sorts of, you know, different services, realm transfers, faction transfers. So, I mean, it's kind of controversial. Some people might argue that it gives people an edge, but it's not like raiding gear yet, so we'll have to see how this pans out, you know.
What's interesting to me is that you said yet, which tells me you think that might be a thing that they do.
Well, it's always a possibility, you know.
Is it? I mean that legitimately.
Even if it's a 0.0001% possibility, there's always the chance that they'll take it there. I mean, I know that's definitely a concern that a lot of people have, even if it is a tinfoil hat concern. So, you know, honestly, I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see if and how it comes to America. I mean, you know, it might just be something that they do for the Asian realm and then decide that they don't want to implement it. But then the other people are like, oh, well, you know, Diablo 3's Real Money Auction House was just a testing ground for being implemented in World of Warcraft, so.
Well, and it's interesting, you know, I know a lot of people who said, oh, as soon as WoW adds a cash shop, I'm out forever. And it's worth mentioning, one of the items here that is very specifically cited as going to be sold in the cash shop are Lesser Charms of Good Fortune, which currently are an item that you, you know, grind out basically every week to get, you know, Elder Charms or
whatever.
That's
right.
So I kind of feel like that is a non-superficial item to be buying. I feel like people do have a little bit of play to win right there inbuilt in that already, even though it's one that you can do for not spending money relatively easy. Like, I can grind out enough of those charms in like an hour for the whole week. So I don't view it as a big deal. This is not a deal breaker to me, but I'm really interested, and I'm tying this into what you were just saying right now. I'm curious, though, how many people are going to put their money where their mouth is and actually cancel over this.
Right.
Because, and you made me think about this when you brought up the Diablo 3 auction house. When we first got word of that, I remember a lot of people saying that if you could just buy your way to the best gear in the game, they would just quit. And, you know, obviously, endgame Diablo 3 right now is very centered around just buying what you need out of the auction house. And yet, I still know a lot of people who said they would quit if that was the thing, who have not quit, and in fact have spent $2 or $3 to get, you know, the best possible item for their slot.
You know, the thing is that you don't have to play that way to play. I mean, it's just, it raises the whole issue of, you know, how much of an advantage do you get. It sounds like what they're really focusing on is for players who don't have as much time, and one thing in particular was that I was reading was that, you know, a lot of Asian players who play by the hour, whether it's leveling and all or trying to catch up to their friends, like if they hadn't been playing in a while, that the level grind from 1 to 90 is that where we're at now? 90? Level 90?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, 90.
I have a level 90. I do raids, but I couldn't off the top of my head tell you that.
I had to do a little math in my head, but, you know, so. And, I mean, I guess I can understand it if you don't have a lot of playtime, but, I mean, honestly, you know, with heirlooms and stuff.
Yeah, I feel like leveling goes super fast these days, but whatever. I mean, if people want to pay, like, the XP buff, I'm actually 100% okay about. I'm actually okay with the whole thing. Like, I don't really care, but I'm more interested in seeing how many people are all talk and no bite on the issue.
That's
like,
true.
That, for me, is the most interesting part of this story. You know, if this is a test on Blizzard's part, like, how many people who previously said they would quit now are going to not quit? Because I feel like for most people, they're just going to be like, oh, well, I know I said I'd quit, but it's actually not that bad. And for me, it's like, yeah, like, no shit.
It'll be interesting to see the pricing and the duration of the XP buff, because, you know, that could shape it a lot, too. I mean, because, like, if it was, like, 99 cents for, you know, a 6-hour buff or something, like, I would do that to
get, like, one
annoying, like,
one Stretch Sunday that I know I have 6 hours to play, I'd totally do that.
It would suck if you're like, oh, I bought the XP buff, but then my mom made me clean my room, and I just wasted $3.99.
I would laugh so hard if that happened to someone I know, because I'm a bad person.
Well, hopefully it wouldn't happen to anyone we know.
I'm kind of hoping it would happen to you.
Rude. Well, you know, I feel like we're almost getting into a mini discussion here, so we should move it on. But let's just say that it'll be interesting to see how this develops and if this leads to a freemium like model for WoW. You know, there's a lot of possibilities.
A lot of people are guessing that WoW will go freemium with the next expansion. And I don't know if I agree with that, but I can see why people would.
You know,
think
I was
that.
Talking to Rob Roberts from OLR and Horde House, and one of his thoughts is that like everything but like maybe the
girl, he has a show where he talked about this. It was this week on Horde House.
No, I know. I'm just saying for people who may have not had the chance to tune in yet. That, you know, he was talking to me about it, so that's why I want to bring it up.
It even says here in my show notes, send people to Horde House. Rob Roberts, if you're listening, I expect some money.
Ah!
Moving on to a topic more appropriate of this episode. You had a point?
Yes.
Prove it.
He was saying...
Oh, yeah, you're biting off him. Let people listen to his program.
Fine.
Rude.
It's not like that was the only news point that they made on air. But you can go to Horde House to listen more. Hordehouse.com, part of the Voice of Geeks Network.
Girl, I'm gonna slap you.
So, hi, I'm shouting out to our very good friend.
Moving on to a more appropriate story for this episode. The Sonic 4 episodes, both 1 and 2, are now available on the Ouya shop.
Cool. I'm not the biggest fan of Sonic 4, to be honest. It wasn't bad at all, but, you know, I was a little bit let down.
What did you think of Episode 2? Because I thought Episode 2 was way better.
You know, I'm not really sure what my feelings are on Episode 2.
Did you play any of the Metal Sonic stuff that you got for having both of them? Because it was like a direct sequel to Sonic CD. It was actually kind of rad.
I did not. To be fair, I did not get a chance to do the Metal Sonic stuff, so I should probably go back and do that, maybe on the Ouya.
Ouya?
Oh, yeah!
Whoa, that was a little bit raunchy, dude.
Raunchy? I was trying to sound like Macho Man Randy Savage.
No, but you kind of sounded like,
oh, yeah, baby.
Were you just doing, like, sex dialogue as Fat Albert? Like, what the... Like, if I sounded like that, I am so sorry to everyone out there in Radioland. Oh, no. All right, moving on.
Here's some pirate news. Yarr!
You can take this one.
Well, it's actually against pirates, but it's the kind of pirates that we don't support.
Yay!
Nintendo had a court victory in its ongoing quest to rid the world of the R4 flash cart, in the words of Joystick. This also... involved 49 Good. Other companies, including Capcom, Konami, Square Enix, and Namco Bandai. You know, we don't support piracy unless it's being a pirate.
Internet radio piracy?
Yeah, unless it's being a Game Boy pirate. So, you know, good on them. And that's pretty much it. don't buy flash carts.
Spelunky is coming to PC in August. I feel like we've talked about the fact that Spelunky is coming to PC before. I could be wrong, but in any event, it has been confirmed to be hitting on both Steam and GOG on August 8th.
I've never had the chance to play Spelunky, but it's described as an unforgiving roguelike, so that sounds like a Captain Spike title.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of super here for that. I haven't really taken the time to sit down and play it yet, but I'm really looking forward to it, and now that it's coming to PC, I'll just wait for that.
And it's the gussied up version from Xbox Live Arcade, as Joystick said. I just liked that they said gussied up.
Delightful. You probably already have noticed, if you're listening to this show, because that means you probably are a Nintendo fan and or have a 3DS. The Street Pass games that have been added to the Mii Plaza are now available in North America. These are four new games. MeForce, which is a shooter. Flower Town, which is a gardening sim. The quote-unquote spooky puzzler. Monster Manor. And a strategy game called Warrior's Way. They are priced at $5 each, but you can get all four of them in a bundle for $15. I have not bought these yet, but I'm actually pulling out my 3DS right now to buy them. So,
he is. He's not just saying
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, this is a real thing that's happening right now. Slykick, why don't you take this next news story? Because, I mean, telling people that the games were out, that's all I have. I haven't played these games.
So speaking of pirates, this almost reminds me of, was it Earthbound that had the anti-piracy?
Among others, but yes.
That was the most famous one, right? Deus Ex The Fall, which is an iOS game. If you are playing it on...
Well, bro, I think you mean Deus Ex.
Whoa.
I'm sorry, go on.
Dropping a deuce on your ex. Anyway, Deus Ex The Fall is an iOS game.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Deus Ex The Fall is an iOS game, and if you're playing it on a jailbroken device, first of all, shame on you, and secondly, guns aren't going to work.
No, honestly, I'm actually not going to say shame on you. I have all kinds of devices that I've hacked, or jailbroken, or rooted, or, you know, modded, and I feel like, you know what? If you're listening to our show, you probably are better than pirating games and hurting people and stealing, and you just want to open up your device for use for using Homebrew, and you probably want to have access to your device to use as you feel like. And as long as you bought this game, I think it is complete bullshit that they locked you out of playing it completely. But I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's interesting, because the thing is that jailbreaking is not illegal. It's just...
Well, yeah, in the U.S., it's perfectly legal.
So, yeah, it's interesting that punished for jailbreaking.
This person has a horse hat. Like, that is an Epona hat.
Oh, my God. It's Alan from California. Is that Alan from... from not Horde House.
No, it is not. It is... I feel so bad for Alan.
Having to be part of Fabulous Flames.
Yeah, that you just referred to him as Alan from Fabulous Flames. I'm sorry, nobody deserves that. Not even you.
Wow.
Go on, tell me more about Deus Ex while I download this thing.
Well, your guns won't work if you're playing it on a jailbroken device. So, I mean, you know, I shouldn't really say shame on you for jailbreaking. But it's interesting because it's not like you are pirating the game. So...
I mean, theoretically you could be, but we're assuming that you haven't, because having a jailbroken device does not make you a pirate.
Oh, here's some breaking news from Joystick, actually. They're going to be putting out an update that will unbreak the guns on jailbroken devices.
Unbreak my guns! Say you'll shoot me again! Sorry. I will never do that again.
Okay, I sang the DuckTales news as the DuckTales theme, so you were entitled to that. And to be fair, this news, just hit on Joystick, as we are recording. So it's not like we're like, ooh, we were posting an outdated news item. So, fresh from the presses.
Please let the record show that I'm shaking my head right now.
Worms 3 is going to be a mobile exclusive. That's cool.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the first part of this is that Worms 3 has been announced, after many, many, many years. You know, Team 17 has, in fact, announced Worms 3, finally. It turns out that Worms 3D wasn't canon after all.
Ha!
Now, go on.
So it'll be interesting because it's going to allow online asynchronous multiplayer, which looks kind of like the Words with Friends model, and class system. So,
I have to say, man, Worms with a class system sounds so good.
I'm curious if we will see an Android release, which means that we can maybe play it on the Ouya, because right now only been... announced for iPhones and iPads in quarter 3 of this year.
Excellent. That's really quite very exciting. And last, but most certainly not least, and this news is super, super, super fresh. About 12 hours ago, it looks like, Nippon Ichi announced Disgaea 4, The Return, headed to Vita. Along with that, Criminal Girls Invitation was announced. The Vita port of Disgaea 4, which is Disgaea 4, The Return, is planned for release in January 2014 in Japan, and Criminal Girls Invitation, which we know very, very little about up at this point other than the name, is apparently slated for release this winter. In addition, the Asagi 10th Anniversary Project has finally been started being planned. Asagi, you may be familiar with if you played any other Nippon Ichi games, is that weird rabbit mascot thing they have that they've been saying that they would make a game for the last 10 years.
I'm just a little confused, because I thought that the portable Disgaea always had a cute little pun on the console releases for the subtitle of the game.
Yeah, like Afternoon of Darkness,
yes.
Or, you know, any of the other... I can't think of any of them right now. But, in any event, that is the end of our news. I believe we have a returning segment that we've skipped for a few weeks. Would you like to lead us into that?
That's tough on my voice to do that.
Girl, it is not even... It's not even hard. You're incorrect.
I'm not as metal as you, sorry. So, unfortunately, we have some doomy, gloomy news to bring you this week.
Doomy, doom, doom. Doomy, doomy, doom, doom.
Are you being Invader Zim again?
You literally already made that joke.
No, I know. I was doing a callback to it. Unfortunately, very unfortunately, Capcom is going through, well, I mean, maybe it's not unfortunate, but, Capcom's going through reorganization, and Christian Svensson, who is Senior VP of Planning and Business Development, is going to be departing.
You know, this is a really big deal in a lot of ways, actually, because, Sven, as we all know him online, he would interact with the fans a lot. He was super communicative, both on, like, Twitter and even like some forums, and certainly on the Capcom Unity boards. This is just a real loss. He has been a strong proponent of bringing the Monster Hunter games to the U.S., bringing the Ace Attorney, Phoenix Wright games to the U.S. So this is very, very dire. Like, this is a very bad thing. When I saw this, it felt like a gut punch, because seriously, some of my favorite games from the last decade that Capcom has brought over could largely be traced back to Sven. So this is definitely super concerning.
Well, I think the most alarming part, concerning and disconcerting, is I think what you're going for.
Gruel.
No, this is not gruel news, because the really alarming part for me, or it definitely sets off some alarms for me, is that he said, "While I wish the company the best of luck, Capcom is going in a different direction, and the need for people at my level relative to other areas is lacking." So, yikes.
Sounds to me like a casual / mobile focus is in the cards for Capcom.
No!
Like, this is a problem. I'm hoping that this just
means... They should just sell the Mega Man IP to Nintendo, TBH.
The thing is, in light of Smash 4 or whatever, like, I kind of agree.
Nintendo, we're buying up all your faves!
Like, could you imagine, like, after all the controversy that we already saw with Bayo, if Nintendo is like, oh yeah, we also have Mega Man now. LOL, smell you later, bitches.
We're going to put out Mega Man Legends 3, but we're rebuilding it from the ground up. Also, please look forward to Mega Man X9.
Yeah, well, I mean, that would be like heaven.
Plus, Mega Man 11, coming to the eShop. Nintendo.
Okay, anyway, moving on from all
of this.
If
you're listening, stop. Bye, Mega Man.
Let's move away from this fan wankery. Yeah, this news is very sad about Capcom. I'm very concerned. You know, we do know that Remember Me was, you know, a fairly high budget effort that flopped super hard. So that I would have to assume that that kind of factors into what's going on here.
For some reason, I feel like it got too many comparisons to The Last of Us, which overshadowed it.
Yeah, well, I mean, even like, releasing
oh,
the same...
Oh, they're both games with girls.
Even it's sad. It's sad that that's basically true. Like, that's a very sad thing. But, you know, it seemed like a really poor release window for that game to go up against that competition. Like, why would you do that? So, I don't know. I haven't had a chance to sit down and play that game yet. I'm really looking forward to it because I think it looks really cool.
Yeah.
I like the fact that there's, like, Street Fighter moves in that game. So, you know, in any event, I'm looking and trying to figure out, like, where did things go wrong for Capcom in the last year?
Yeah, I know, because, I mean, we just talked about them not all that long ago on our Gaming Giants of the Japanese Industry.
You say not that long ago, but that was probably almost a year ago.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, relatively speaking.
Relatively speaking, that's more than the half of the life of this show.
True. That said, you know, it was only at the most a year ago that we were saying, you know, that even though we don't agree with Capcom's business decisions 100% of the time, that they're doing pretty well. So, yeah.
That they make the choices that they need to make to keep afloat. And that's why this is so concerning.
Yeah.
Because this tells me that they had basically no other option and that this was what they had to do to stay alive. And that makes me worry. Like, I still remember that survey that they did a year ago where they were talking about digitally releasing Demon's Crest. Like, I still need them to be a company that will do that.
Nintendo, buy Demon's Crest.
Girl, ain't nobody gonna buy Demon's Crest. Oh, I mean, people will buy it on Virtual Console, but, like, the IP, I don't think anyone's buying.
What if you could buy it?
I would in a heartbeat. Like, I would find, like... If
Game Buoy Kickstarter to buy Demon's Crest.
If in a worst case scenario where Capcom's IPs were dissolved and everything was going to different publishers or whatever, and there was a bidding war like we just saw with THQ, and you know, some of those THQ properties sold for amounts in the tens of thousands of dollars.
You would drop a couple grand on.
I would honestly take out a loan and see what I could do. I would. I can't front.
Yeah. So this next piece of doomy gloomy news. I was waiting for you to
no,
do your
because
opinion.
If it's expected, it's not worth doing.
Is that because Zombie U sold so poorly, Ubisoft is not going to be making a sequel.
Well, and, you know, there's a couple of caveats to this. When you say it that way, it sounds a little more dire than the real situation is.
Yeah, it's not really but it's just...
But this is more, you know, Ubisoft confirmed. They hope that the Wii U will take off. They hope that it will do well. As things currently stand, they still haven't made a profit on Zombie U. And as such, there isn't currently a sequel planned.
Well, Yves Guillemot... which I don't know if I just butchered his name.
You did.
I don't speak French, sorry. Said that it wasn't even close to making a profit. So it wasn't just that, it didn't make a profit. Like, it apparently bombed.
Yes. We call that a bomba. And, you know, I mean, it sucks, but at the same time, like, I don't know how to say this without sounding callous, so I'm just going to say it and sound callous. It sounds like maybe y'all over-budgeted, because there's no reality where, like, a day one game is going to achieve, like, AAA budget sales, because
yeah, Assassin's Creed numbers.
Like, that number of consoles literally doesn't exist in the world, like, when a console comes out.
Well, the interesting thing is that as recently as May, they were talking about working on a prototype with Ubisoft Montpellier.
Well, and that's why I think that ultimately we will see a follow-up in some context. I wouldn't be that surprised to see it being a multi-platform with the PS4, using the Vita as your second screen for the second screen experience there. And if that helps them move enough units for it to be profitable, that's great. I support it.
They'd have to call it, like, Zombie 2 or Zombie 3.
Yeah, just 3. Zombie 2. Like, replace the U with a 2. Just Zombie 2. Done.
Because Zombie was the original game, right? That Zombie U was the spiritual sequel to with Zombie.
Strictly speaking, yes, but it doesn't matter. You could just call it Zombie 2. It would be fine.
Yeah.
And I think that's what will happen. I do. They've already done prototyping. We know they have internal interest. And, you know, the second screen experience is getting pushed a lot. Like, a lot of people are saying second screen is going to be where it's at in the next generation.
What if we saw...
And Nintendo's already there. So, you know, Nintendo's there. The other two are catching up. And especially the PS4 synergy with Vita. If it delivers what Sony is promising, and... let's be clear here, I think that's unlikely, but I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think that we're going to have a lot of developers hungry to develop these kinds of experiences, and so I wouldn't be that surprised to see Zombie 2, as I'm just calling it here, I wouldn't be that surprised to see Zombie 2 be a multi-plat game taking advantage of this format.
Or Zombie 3D for the 3DS. I don't think that would happen, but that would be so cool, wouldn't it?
I don't think so.
You wouldn't want to play Zombie U on your 3DS?
First off, that game was really pretty and in its way, and it would not look nearly as good on the 3DS, which would be problematic. Also, looking between the screens constantly, literally physically looking down and away from your TV is half of the suspense of that game. Like, that game is so perfect. Okay. But, like, I don't think you could achieve that with the 3DS. Like, you're not looking down at your controller, which is supposed to simulate looking into a bag. Like, no, you're just looking at a screen right next to your other screen.
Point taken.
Well, that about does it for our doom and our gloom. So, with that having been discussed, let's move on to our actual discussion. The Ouya.
Ouya!
So, I want to apologize to our listeners real quick. We might be a little sloppier than usual here talking about the Ouya. That is largely because it really was sort of a off-the-cuff idea to be doing this episode in the first place. I didn't get to do the level of research that I normally like to do about these things. I basically just sat down and spent, 6 to 8 hours with the Ouya over the last week. And I like it a lot, actually. It's really grown on me, and I see its value. But, again, I haven't done the research that I like to do. I couldn't tell you the specific names of who's responsible for controller design or what have you. So, I for that, I apologize.
Yeah, and, you know, I, before we get started with this, I just need to address that I kind of had jumped on the Ouya hate train, so to speak, and... You know, I've done that before with the PS3, when I had my issues with the PS3. And, you know, now that I've spent time with the Ouya, I have a lot of good things to say about it. You know, I mean, I think the point that I was trying to make was that there were a lot of bumps in the road for Ouya, and I think a lot of the ways that they maybe handled the bumps in the road weren't the best. But, you know, the interesting thing is, and I think that's why we really want to, you know, put our support out there for the Ouya, is that a lot of the coverage, the media coverage for Ouya is, you know...
Overwhelmingly negative.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not necessarily so much of a hate train overall, but, you know, a lot of even mainstream media reviews I was seeing were like, you know, not worth the price, or, you know, that... You know, it's just, it's an unfinished product, etc. So, you know, which are things people could argue, but...
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm always here for intelligent discussion and debate, and I'm always here for contrasting opinions. But just, like, baseless negativity, like, there's a lot of people on message boards in particular who even still rail against the Ouya, and it's like, it's very clear you've never actually played one. So that's a problem.
Yeah, and that's where my problem, that was, it's not what, where my problem was, that was my problem.
But, you know, we've remedied it, and you were obviously very gracious, and you sat down and, you know, played with the Ouya for, you know, a fair chunk of time, and I think you've seen, you know, some of the highs and some of the lows, and hopefully now you're in a little bit of a better place to discuss it.
But even some of the lows are kind of high point.
Yeah, no, honestly. Oh, man, what was that game called? The Frog one?
The Amazing Frog?
Oh, and there is a question mark at the end of it. There's a question mark
there, so we'll talk about that in a minute.
That, I need to talk about it right now, because it's about...
Oh, are we moving into games? I thought we were going to talk about...
We're not. We are going to talk about the other things first, but I'm going to talk about that one game right this moment.
Okay.
Like, you're a frog, and you're in this super PS1-looking world, except with a much better draw distance than the PS1 could arrange. And you basically just flop around trying to jump for points. It's super, like, borderline broken. Like, it's absolutely, if this game existed a few weeks ago, it would have been in our shit games episode. But as it stands, it's so bad that it's super good. I really like it. It's a complete mess, and I had so much fun that I had a hard time putting it down. And sometimes when your frog is jumping or bouncing, he farts. Just...
And Captain Spike, like, glitched out the game so that he was on this one, like, part of the bouncy house, and just kept, like, jumping, like, and getting mad points.
Yeah, clock it. This will probably be our first Let's Play. So please look forward to it.
Please look forward to it.
Anyway, to discuss the actual discussion, let's talk a little bit about the controller itself, the controller of the console. Because I know this has been a real big sticking point for the community.
You mean like
large.
The way that the button's stuck under the faceplate? Oh.
So I'm not saying that's not a thing that happens. Because the older controllers in particular, it sounds like that really did happen a lot. I've listened to other people's podcasts who have talked about their own experiences with the Ouya who have had these issues with the controller. And, I mean, I guess this is probably a function of how late I got mine, because, you know, again, I've had it for, like, a week now. Like, a week. But, I've not had any issues with it. The controller feels solid as hell. I've had no issues with the faceplate slipping off or getting buttons stuck under it or anything. I think it's comfy as hell, and I actually really, yeah. really like it.
It has a really comfortable form factor, you know, the buttons and triggers are really responsive. I would compare it to a slightly more streamlined 360 controller. It's just...
Now, hold on, though, because I have to make a crowbar separation here. You, unlike most popular opinion, are not the biggest fan of the 360 controller.
I have smaller hands, so the 360 controller and its curves and swerves feel a little bulky to me. So, I mean, that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Okay, now see, and I think obviously that's perfectly fair. That's your opinion. I just wanted to be clear here, because a lot of people look at the 360 controller as some sort of de facto standard, that was not the context in which you were discussing
it. But that said, the Ouya controller, you know, it feels really good. And, you know, I haven't had a chance to use the touchpad functionality. I've heard that it can be kind of touchy, so to speak, but...
I've heard people say that, but I use it all the time for name entry and stuff, and it's been fine. I find the touch screen, or, you know, the touchpad, I'm sorry, to be way more user-friendly than using the D-pad to scroll through a virtual keyboard. So...
And, you know, I mean, let's be real. Vita, with its backwards... Not backwards, it's a touchpad on the back. I have issues with that. It always just feels awkward to me.
Yeah, I hate that thing. I talk about it here on the show all the time. I effing hate
that. Do you remember in Assassin's Creed Liberation where you had to, like, open
up a... Pickpocket!
Or you had to open up an envelope by, like...
Can we not? Let's... Yeah. This is the Ouya episode.
Yeah. One thing, speaking of controllers, that I thought was really cool is because I didn't bring mine with me to the SS Game Buoy... But Captain Spike just hooked up his PS3 controller via Bluetooth, and it, like, worked perfectly. I mean, it did take a minute for me to think, okay, the O, U, Y, and A buttons correspond to whatever on the PS3 controller.
Cross, square, circle, and triangle.
Yeah. So, I mean, it, like, you know, I think it's really cool that they included that functionality and really speaks to the openness of the Ouya, which was really its kind of big selling point.
Yeah, you know, I haven't used it yet, but apparently you can also use wired 360 controllers with it.
I heard that, and I have one.
In fact, maybe before we go out to a barbecue later today, we will invite Space Pirate Ben to play some three-player Towerfall with us.
I think that would be a great idea.
Yeah, me too.
Let's talk about Towerfall. Because if anything can be described as the killer app for Ouya right now, it's probably Towerfall.
Yeah, I think you're right. Towerfall is probably best described as an 8-bit Smash clone. But it's both more and less than that in a great way. So you might remember there was a joke in gaming circles that this was the year of the bow. A lot of games had bows in them earlier this year.
Tomb Raider
is, yeah, that's like sort of the easiest one to think about. And last year, this was the year of the bow was going on.
Yeah.
And so basically imagine if you had the Smash Brothers, you take that idea of that level of like platforming and fighting other people. But instead of fist fighting, you are bow fighting, and you have three arrows, which obviously if you fire one, you're going to have to go track it down and pick it up before you get shot in the head.
I feel like I was picking up some of your arrows, though.
Yes, you can. You can pick up other arrows because they're just arrows. Yeah. Like they're not locked to your bow. And basically you want to maneuver in these 2D planes in these little arenas, and shoot your opponents before you get shot. So it sounds really basic. There are items, Smash style. Some of them let you do like air double jumps. Some of them are like bombs. Some are shields.
You got some wings.
Yeah. It's
was it a little can of Red Bull.
It wasn't, but I wish it was. The game, it's just really cute. It's super accessible. I was playing it in minutes. Not even minutes, like seconds. Like, I picked it up,
yeah.
And the controls just are very intuitive.
It took me
a
minute to figure
sense.
Out, okay, this is how I jump, this is how I shoot, and then...
Bam, you're playing. And jump and shoot.
And then I was shooting Captain Spike with flame arrows.
Yeah. There's a lot of environmental interactivity, which I like a lot.
I have to ask you...
Just a real fun, awesome, fun game.
I have to ask you, because one thing that I do really like about the Ouya, now that I've actually sat down with it, is the every game having a free element to a certain degree.
Yeah, that's really incredible. So, you know, this was a big part of the platform when they were attempting to fund it. They were like, oh yeah, every game is going to be free or have, you know, free-to-play elements so that you can play it without spending any money. That way, nothing is a surprise. You know if you want the game you're playing. And as a result, I've basically downloaded anything that looks even a little interesting to me. And I am just really blown away by, like, some of these games are, I would not have realized that this game was so good, but now I'm totally willing to throw some money down.
Yeah. I have to ask you, though, in regards to Towerfall, how do you feel about the $14.99 price point?
So Towerfall is $14.99, which... for the experience, is a little more money than I was expecting to pay. I was expecting $9.99 and hoping for like $4.99 to $6.99. That having been said, it is an Ouya exclusive. Obviously, they need to get paid so they can make more games. So I'm going to pay it.
Powerfall is just one dude, right?
I believe so. I believe it's just one dude. And obviously, I want this one dude to keep making games. I follow him on Twitter because I think he's, like, kind of attractive, and
He
seems kind of clever, so it's cool. Yeah, like, go Towerfall. I like this game. Please make more Ouya games.
I will definitely, once I get into my new place and set up my Ouya, I will definitely be picking this up.
Excellent.
Although I do agree, it's a little bit higher price point than I would prefer to pay for a game like that. But, you know, we here at Game Boo, we have feelings... capital F about
paying for games and flexible price points and etc. Speaking of flexible price points, why don't we talk about Stalagfite?
Stalagfite!
Why don't you tell me about the history of Stalagfite's development?
Well, Stalagfite was actually initially created for the Nordic Game Jam, and it was completed in 2 days. Then they submitted it to the Ouya Create. I don't know if that was necessarily like a game jam thing, but I think it was. I'm honestly not too familiar with that, to be quite honest. And you can also play it on the PC, but, I mean, I don't know. I feel like I would much rather play it on the Ouya because...
It feels good on the Ouya.
It feels good on the Ouya. And basically the premise of the game is that you are a volcano scientist doing your thing in a volcano, and then it erupts. So you have to jump up onto stalactites or stalagmites. Which are the ones that are from the ceiling?
I can never remember. I'm not a geologist. I feel like we've discussed this on the air. I can never keep those two straight.
Anyway, rocks are falling.
Rocks are, in fact, falling.
And you've got to jump up and... You know, honestly, I don't know if you can possibly get to the top of the volcano.
You won't. I hope so.
I have not experienced that yet.
I'm probably not even close.
So, in one-player mode, you're just trying to see how high you can get. In two-player mode, you're trying to see who can last the longest. It's a lot of fun. It's a little wacky. And
the best part is, the full game is a free download.
Yep.
But, there is a payment system where you can donate to the developers. And rather than just straight up like, oh, give us X number, they phrase it as, like, buy us a pizza.
It's called the pizza shop. P-I-Z-Z-A.
Whipped cream pouring like waterfalls. So, like, you can donate to them $14.99 so they can get a whole pizza. Or you can donate to them $4.99 so they can get, like, two slices and a Coke. Or you can donate 99 cents so they can get a single slice.
So cute.
Just really cute and really charming, and I absolutely... Like, that's
I'm gonna
something,
buy
like,
pizza.
Y'all get my money.
Buying them a pizza.
Like, this is a little cute game, but you're getting my money. You're getting my money. So... I know that you made a big list about all of the Ouya games we've played this weekend that I've showed you. I made fun of you for making this list, but now I'm going to rely on it. What's next on the list?
I think the one I want to talk about next is Fist of Awesome.
That game was awesome. I punched hella bears.
Yeah, this is a game that PETA would not be happy with, but it's super funny. You are playing as Tim Burr, who is presumably some sort of burly lumberjack dude. I don't know. We skipped past the story part because lol.
Yeah, I'm not really here for that. But he was wearing flannel, so I assume
he's
lumberjack.
Beardy, and so you know, it's very like pixely, kind of evoking, you know, a very retro look, which is a theme with a lot of these in fact Towerfall and Stalactite, both very retro pixely pixel art sort of games. But also, Fist of Awesome has some really cool, like, parallax scrolling going on, so it's a really interesting fusion of, like, retro looks with stuff that would not have been contemporaneous with that time. So you start out beating up some deer, and then suddenly it's like, bear fight, and then the bear wearing flannel.
Yeah, that bear, when the bear came out in flannel and the game was like, bear fight, I was just like, ooh, girl.
Right? So,
which is to say that I was very excited.
Trying to be as manly as Tim Burr.
Yep.
And then I didn't really catch what it was, if it was like the, like, you know, the shop, you know, the game, not like an in-game store, but, you know, like, oh, we're going to the shop to buy supplies. It was called Bear Grills.
Like, Bear, and then Grills, like the grills that you cook on. But obviously a reference to the dude Bear Grills.
So, LOL. So, again, very cute. And, you know...
what else is on the list?
I'd like to talk about Dub Wars.
Dub Wars. Oh, man, I really like that game.
So, Dub Wars is basically Geometry Wars meets Dubstep. And you might be like, what? And at first I was like, okay, this is a little silly. I was watching Captain Spike play it. And then, cause, you know, it was like doing little wub-wub things and...
And then the drop happened.
And then the drop happened, and he shot a giant laser. I just thought it was really clever hybrid of a shooter. Would that be classified as a shmup?
I mean, I would, but I don't know. A lot of these genre purists get super anal, so that's why I'm not a genre purist.
But it's also, like, a rhythm game, kind of. I mean, I wouldn't say that...
It's more shooter than rhythm.
It reminds me a little bit of Every Extend, Extreme, Extra. I never get the words right in the right order, but you know what game I'm talking about, right?
E4.
E4. Well, also E3 before that.
Well, yes, Every Extend, whatever.
It reminds me of that with the little bits of rhythm-y bits, but...
Man, I might have to play E4 as soon as we're done with this. I love that game.
That was the first game I picked up for my PSP years ago. That said, really clever, and I'm always for games implementing rhythm-y bits, for lack of a better word, in clever ways. So I was really impressed with it. And what do you have to say about Dub Wars?
I really like it. I'm not super into dubstep. Occasionally I hear a dubstep remix and I'm like, oh, I didn't hate that. But I really liked this game.
I liked it in the context of the game a lot.
Yeah, well, it really got me anticipating the drop, and I guess that's what dubstep is all about. So, well played.
And it's lasers everywhere.
Come 911!
And now, time for an effing rant.
Moving on.
Game Buoy Classic.
Hashtag Game Buoy Classic.
So, the one I saved for last, because we're not going to talk about every single game on the Ouya. Oh, you know what I want to talk about really quick is Final Fantasy III, before I save the best for last.
Super high resolution, probably the best way to play that version of Final Fantasy III.
It looks great, plays great, looks better.
Tastes great with peanut butter.
Looks better than Final Fantasy VII. End of story.
Not difficult.
Not hard to do. The last one that I wanted to talk about is Polarity.
And oh, yes.
At first, I was like, oh, this looks like it's basically a Portal clone. Because instead of making portals, you have, and I mean, in fact, they're blue and orange, or I think they're stayed blue and red, polarities that you switch. You described it as kind of like Ikaruga meets Portal.
Yeah, right? I would absolutely describe the game as Ikaruga.
So instead of shooting portals, you have to pass through lasers or... stand on platforms based on which color of polarity you are.
And so you pass through these lasers if they're the same color as you. So there was one sequence, and this is even in the introductory level, so I was very pleased, where there was a blue laser bridge. So I had to be the right color red so that I could stand on it.
Because otherwise you'd fall
through. But then there was a wall that was also blue.
So you had to switch to your blue polarity.
So I had to switch to my blue polarity while jumping through it and then changing back to red polarity before I landed to land on the other side of the blue laser bridge.
And there's also a equivalent to the weighted companion cube.
Yeah, some little blocks that open stuff up.
Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely an homage to Portal, but doing really clever things with level design that, you know, I mean, Portal did really clever things with their level designs, but I mean, because of the nature of the way the game plays, it's different. So
yeah, it's actually really compelling. I really like it. I did not buy it because I was literally just playing it 20 minutes before we started this episode. I wanted to get last few games in, but I'm probably going to buy it. I don't know how much it costs yet, but I'm probably going to buy it as soon as I turn this recording off.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people, like we said, saying Towerfall is the killer app. For me, it would be Polarity.
You know, it is Towerfall for me, but it's a close race with Polarity, and that's probably the best thing I could say about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, kind of the theme here being, like, really interesting retro indie games, and I mean, which seems like a duh statement, but I mean, I guess kind of actually seeing it in action, it's like, oh yeah, well, they carry through with their mission.
Well, before we hit a few little bits, let's have the real meat of the discussion right now. What do you, and you were just starting it, but now that you've played it, now that you've gotten some time in, how do you feel about the Ouya overall?
I do not regret putting my money forward from one. Although, you know, one of the criticisms that, like, mainstream media is making is like, oh, $99 is too much. You know, maybe for the experiences you're getting, it would be more than, like, you know, you would want to pay. But I think the fact that, you know, it's kind of going towards creating a platform for games like this to be developed, I think that's worth the investment. If the worst case scenario being that the Ouya totally flops and the Ouya 2 never happens, I'll still be happy that this community exists.
Well, that's actually, you know, I'm happy that you said community, because that was exactly the word I needed to spring off on how I feel about the Ouya. And let me just say, I'm actually rather very enthusiastically an Ouya fan at this point.
Yeah, I'm actually very pro Ouya now, and I am eating my words and putting foot in mouth.
Well, you know, I'm happy that you can acknowledge that, and I absolutely believe in moving on from that. So, but the thing is, for me, about Ouya, I was just gonna say, I wanted to acknowledge what you were saying, but...
Right.
But to my point, I'm really happy that the Ouya exists, because I had underestimated how focused on indie development this was going to be. You know, I've seen a lot of people talk about how, oh, good, Sega's putting out Sonic games for the Ouya. That's great. I want major third parties working on it. And I see people saying, oh, Squaresoft put Final Fantasy III on it. I hope they put Final Fantasy IV on it and Tactics on it. And, you know, I mean, I want all of these things. I would certainly buy Final Fantasy Tactics for the Ouya if it had all those fancy high-res sprites that they did for Android and iOS versions. In fact, frankly, I think probably we'll get that soon. And I honestly think that that will be the definitive version of Final Fantasy Tactics, will be the Ouya version if they do one, since it will be the fancy sprites, no slowdown with all of the new stuff from War of the Lions, and controller support. Like, that, to me, like, that is literally the perfect
version. And if you even want
the
authentic Tactics experience, play it with your DualShock 3.
Yeah, right? Play it with a DualShock. So, to me, I definitely think major third-party support is a good thing. Obviously, it doesn't, more content is never bad. But for me, the real draw of the Ouya, and where I've really been dazzled, is all of these free games from indie developers that I've downloaded, or games with free trials that I've downloaded from indie developers that I never would have ever heard of before, that I've just had so much fun with, that I've had such great, unique experiences with. I think of this game Polarity that we were just talking about. And in some ways, that first introduction level had as interesting of challenges as the entirety of the first Portal game.
Yeah.
So to me, like, the reason why I'm now so Ouya, or so pro Ouya, is that I would not have had these experiences if not for this platform. Because if I'm being honest, and I know there are a couple of people that listen to this show that are super rooted in indie game development, and I hope they reach out to us on this. I don't know of any good resources to find out about new indie games. No one really talks about them. I try when I hear about them, when people point them out to me, I try to point them out as well. But for the most part, I don't feel like there's a really great community for indie games for people who do not themselves develop indie games prior to Ouya. And now I feel like I basically have a box that zaps indie games to my TV for free, you know, for free trials. And it's perfect. Like, I'm so happy with that aspect of this box.
Yeah.
So, I'm a huge fan. I've heard people say that, you know, the $99 is a high barrier to entry. And I respect that. I know that I spend money on games more freely than most people do. This has been a thing. People have called me out on it. And it's absolutely true. So I can't tell you that the value proposition, what that value proposition looks like for you. I will tell you that in the week I've had my Ouya, I have played it more than I've played any of my other consoles, including my Wii U, not more than my 3DS. But anything other than my 3DS.
I don't think it's possible for you to play anything more than you play your 3DS.
No, I play my 3DS literally hours a day on my commute. Like, nothing's gonna beat that.
Yeah.
So, I'm a big fan of the Ouya. I went through my doubtful phase. I went through my rage phase when I didn't get it. for like a month after it could be found in stores. And I was still I was angry about that, and in a way I still am. But again, like I was saying last week, you know, the community banded together, these people with an idea and a dream banded together to make this platform happen, to have it be open, to bring indie devs in. And honestly, that's what I feel we got.
And I think seeing it play out is like, okay, yeah, that was kind of their mission.
And, you know, again,
and like I said, the $99 for me feels like an investment to that community. And I really hope that people, you know, even though, even if it doesn't grow huge, that's, you know, people still continue to support it developer-wise and consumer-wise. And that, you know, even if it's just a little niche community, that it will thrive.
Yep. Absolutely. I really hope, I hope that this is one of those situations. Frankly, I mean, I hope that Ouya is really, really successful. I hope that people pick it up and realize that it has value. One thing I love is, again, we were talking about Towerfall earlier. With that $99 box with a controller of its own, and I have enough controllers lying around my apartment right now that, bam, we're going to have some multiplayer gaming later. There's no other box that offers that kind of experience without buying, you know, all of these very specific controllers. And it sounds dumb, like it sounds like, oh, really, you're complaining about buying controllers? But no, like, this is cool. Like, this thing just works, and I get to have these cool experiences, and I'm just really excited about it. Like, I'm really passionate about the Ouya, and those are not things I ever expected to say.
You know, so also to consider is that he's a little guy, so, you know, won't take up too much space.
He's literally the size of a Rubik's Cube. But, no, I was going to say, the way I see this playing out, hopefully they're very successful, and Ouya 2 comes out and Ouya 3, and you know, I'll probably buy several of these things. I really like them. But if that doesn't happen, I still don't foresee the indie community leaving the Ouya behind completely. I see it being one of those things that people develop for 10 years after the fact, the way that you still sometimes hear about this game getting ported to Dreamcast or that game.
Right.
And I am frankly just pleased as freaking punch. I'm very happy with my Ouya. I'm very happy that I backed it. And I just want to say, fuck yeah, Ouya.
F yeah, Ouya.
F yeah, Ouya.
And you know, the thing that's interesting is that Nintendo, very supportive of indies these days. Sony, very supportive of indies. But, I mean, this is truly a console where
it's an indie console. That's what it's for. Even they, as the Ouya, as a company, like, they're an indie company.
Now, I have some questions for you.
Yes?
For a game offered on, let's say, PSN, Wii U eShop, Ouya, would you go with the Ouya?
It would depend on the game. It would be between Wii U, eShop, or Ouya. And the only reason I say that is I really like playing games on the gamepad.
Right.
That having been said, I have to assume that the Ouya version would probably be a little bit better supported. You know, so I mean, it would really depend on a case by case. But again, it would be like one of the two serious considerations. Like, there's no context in which I would buy a game on PSN that was available on Ouya and eShop. There's no context in which I would buy a game on another platform other than Ouya except for Wii U eShop. So my preference is probably Wii U eShop and then Ouya and then Steam and then PSN and then Xbox and dead last.
So what you're saying is that going forward, if an indie game is not available on Wii U, then you're most likely to get on Ouya.
Yes, this is definitely true.
That's great.
And honestly, I'd probably play the free demo on Ouya first, and then with it already on my device, maybe I'd be lazy and just upgrade.
Right. Now, I guess that goes without saying that for something like Broken Age, that you'll be most likely to play that on your Ouya?
Definitely. That seems very likely to me.
Because that's the only console that will have it, right? I mean, PC and Ouya.
Yeah, it is very likely that I will play Broken Age on my Ouya.
Excellent. I know that was kind of just like a little sub point to my bigger point.
Yeah. I'm getting ready to wrap this up. I had a couple of small little bits. Do you have anything else you want to cover before I do these?
Apparently Gianna Sisters is available for Ouya.
That's awesome. I'll have to look into that.
Along with Gianna Sisters Twisted Dreams, which I just purchased on Steam during the Steam Summer Sale, but maybe, you know, honestly, between hooking up a 360 controller to my PC and playing it on Ouya, maybe I'll just double dip and get it on Ouya.
Ouya?
Oh, yeah.
No, that's cool. I really like that game, and I think that as long as it performs well on Ouya, which it should, it shouldn't be too demanding. Like, that would be a great experience.
You know, I kind of feel like the Ouya, and I mean, our discussion is not done, but I feel like the Ouya's kind of come full circle, or full cube, because it's a little cube. Because when we first pledged about it, you might remember that, we're like, you know, even if it's just a little retro gaming box, that'll be cool. And then all the kerfuffle happened, and, you know, we had our rage periods, and we had our doubtful periods, but I feel like it's really come full circle or full cube, because now I'm like, I have a little box that I can play retro and retro style games on, and that's cool.
Well, and that leads me to that's the perfect segue to my next point. I want to talk about emulators on Ouya. You might recall, if you listen to this show, I was talking about how, worst case scenario, oh, I have an emulator box hooked up to my TV all the time.
That's kind of the point I was just making, yeah.
It's funny, I'm actually not super happy with emulators on Ouya. Not in any particularly negative way. I'm sure for the layman that these emulators are probably super good. I did emulate a little bit of PS1, using obviously a disc image of a game I own. So, and that actually worked really well. It looked really good, probably better than actually running it on a PS1 would have looked. But I was having some lag/timing issues, and I just don't know that there's any way around that. And that's a big issue for me. And so, you know, I have alternative ways to play these games. I ran a couple of Super Nintendo games, obviously, to which I do own the cartridges. And I was a little disappointed with the quality of sound emulation. I'm like, I mean, it was all right.
I mean, these are issues you run into with emulation, period.
Well,
right?
Exactly. These are things that I have, in fact, complained about in most emulators every time we've talked about emulation on the show. About how, why I like the Virtual Console so much is because it's the only emulator where I don't have these weird frame issues. I don't have these weird sounds. The slowdown is all where it's supposed to be. I just want a one-to-one experience. I don't want you to force your shitty filters or shaders on me. I don't want forced frame skip or forced, like, no-show slowdown. Like, I just want the game to be the exact same as it was on the console it was intended.
But, you know, for something...
But for the layman, it's probably a great box for that. And, you know, go for it.
You know, for something that you would not be able to play anywhere else but a ROM at this point... Like, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but, you know, just...
Star Fox 2.
Okay.
Because that was unreleased, so...
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think I would prefer to play it on an Ouya base, like, rather than a PSP.
Man, SNES emulation on PSP.
Yeah, I had issues with that as well.
But yeah, no, it's, you know, it's fine and it does the job. There are better devices for emulation. Hacktweez. But, you know, you could do worse, you could do better. It serves the purpose, but I'm way more excited. This was really the point I was trying to make. I'm way more excited about the box for its own games than I am for emulation at this point.
That's great. Although, you know, a great little living room emu.
I always just call them emus, like the animals, because it's cute.
Emos. By the way, definitely metaphorically putting my foot in my mouth now when I was like, oh, you better not be jailbreaking, and then I'm talking about my custom firmware PSP. Don't come after me, Sony.
Oh, they don't care. It's a PSP. Moving on. They didn't care about the PSP when it was alive.
Yeah, it's not...
quote, end quote, alive.
Well, does that make the poor Vita, then?
Let's see.
Oh, wait, this is an Ouya discussion.
My last two notes on the Ouya, because it's getting time. I'm really surprised that there isn't like a Netflix app yet. Apparently you can use the standard,
browser?
Android Netflix app. Oh. You can sideload it. You can totally super easily sideload apps and APKs or whatever on the, Ouya. I haven't done any yet because I don't have anything I need to do that with. But if I did, I would be. And it's just kind of awkward as I understand it because it turns the, your show on pause when your controller turns off because it detects it like a phone screen turning off.
Oh.
So, boo. But, you know, I'm sure that they'll get a custom app out soon enough. It's
and
Netflix,
honestly,
they're everywhere.
Kind of hashtag first world problems because you personally have, like, multiple devices that can stream Netflix.
Oh, yeah, no, but again, it's just questionable. Like, well, I would prefer to stream Netflix on my Ouya over my PS3 or 360. It certainly consumes the least power of the bunch.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, there's some cool apps on the Ouya shop. One that I really liked was a rain simulator that just played rain sounds while showing, like, some little pixely 8-bit rain.
Well, and it's like a little, like, proto-game, I would say, because you could
control... There's no game element.
Well, you can
control the level of rain that's
coming
down.
It was an interactive art piece.
I could probably give you that. And then last, but certainly not least, I just don't like the way Android handles file management systems. That's not really an Ouya-specific complaint, though. I'm just... Like, it shouldn't be this hard to find the USB stick that's plugged into my device right now.
Yeah.
So, with all that being done, unless you have anything to say, I think that we're done talking about the Ouya.
I think we are.
Oh, yeah.
A little discussion for a little box.
Yes.
And by little discussion, it's probably still, like, 40 minutes for us.
Yeah, right? Like, just about. All right. Well, I think it's time to talk about...
I said, hey, what's going on?
So, you know, this week I played a lot of Ouya. I basically just told you about most of the games that I played this week. And I'm also playing Picross E on the 3DS. If you're not familiar with Picross as a game, it is picture crosswords. Which, you know, the Japanese are all about these portmanteau. And it's really cool. You get, like, a number of... There's, like, a number of just blank boxes and numbers lined up to the boxes, and you have to just sort of logic out using maths, like, what image is hidden under the boxes. It's super cool. That's, like, the worst description of Picross that has ever happened, but if you like puzzle-y games and you like logic games, check out Picross, because it's cool.
Excellent.
What did you play?
I picked up Civilization V Brave New World this week.
Oh, no shit. Me too, though. And I played it.
And I've probably already put in a good 25 hours. And you might be like, oh, well, that's only like two games or whatever. But still, that's still like, you know, the same amount of time that could be put into, you know, half of a JRPG or something. It's just, so putting it in that context, it's like, oh yeah, that's a lot of time. But, you know, I'm really happy with the way that they redid the cultural victory. It involves, like, the tourism now, and you have to, like, decide whether to do, great works by your, you know, great people, your great artists. They have great musicians now. And, like, one thing that I thought was really cute was if you have, like, a great musician that spawns in your city, you can, if you don't have a slot for the great musical work, or you just opt to do this instead, like, as a strategy thing, you can send them on a concert tour that will, like, if you can send them into, like, someone else, like, I could send it over to Captain Spike's, Civilization and spread my culture there. And then every other culture in the game would get a little bit of tourism, cultural influence, but mostly Spike's. You know, there's still, of course, science victory and everything else, and, you know, you could crush your opponents if you really want to. But I mean, I really feel like the main draw that they were kind of pushing was the cultural overhaul, and I really do like it. It feels like your culture trees still affect your gameplay, but it's not like, oh, if I don't select these culture trees, that, you know, that I'll have no chance at getting the cultural victory. So it's a lot more compelling. I haven't had too much experience with all the new civs, but I really like the way that they did trade routes. Like, I think that it really feels more like an economical decision rather than just like, oh. Because, I mean, before, you know, you would just be like, oh, I have my cities connected with a road. There we go. But, I mean, now I can be like, oh, well, I'm going to establish a trade route with Captain Spike's capital because it will give us both such and such amount of gold and, you know, that's cool. And it also maybe gives some of my religion influence, what do they call it, pressure. Some of my religion pressure into his capital so that my religion spreads and I might get bonuses for it. I mean, it's just really, really well done. I definitely anticipate putting in many, many more hours. We still have a game with Seawolf Jason that we need to finish. But I mean, one thing that I really...
Yeah, we played that game like 7 hours.
Yeah. One thing that I really saw firsthand was that, you know, my first experience was that multiplayer game, which we haven't finished yet, and I was like, ooh, I'm not doing too well. And then I started getting better as the time went on. But it really does, like, the game victory really does kind of hinge on the end game now.
Whereas earlier, the entire end game basically came down to, oh, did you manage the first hour right? Basically, everything in the second half of the game was just a result of your choices in the first half of the game.
Yep.
And now the second half matters in and of itself.
And, you know, this is kind of a dumb question because I've never really paid too much attention to it. I know that, to start out, that it each turn goes up in increments, I think, of 4 years. Did it always go, like, as you got into later periods, like, 2 years, then 1 year, then 6 months?
Yes.
Okay, I never really realized that. I was just like, oh, I didn't realize that each turn is, like, when I got into, like,
that gap becomes progressively smaller, because, like, your first, like, basically 1,000 years or whatever go really fast.
Yeah. I don't know why I never noticed that before. I was like, oh, it's January 2013. Now it's July 2013. And it is July 2013.
Oh my gosh, it is July 2013. So yeah, I also played Civ, and I didn't even think about it, but I really liked it because it's Civ, and I love Civ.
Yeah.
Now with Steam trading cards.
Oh wow.
Well, you know, the thing is, I'm not really into this whole Steam trading card business, but that's a game I'm gonna play anyway, so I guess I'll get them. You can sell them. Apparently, people make money.
Cool. I feel like we know people who would do that.
Spoiler alert, we do know people who would do that. We know people who have already done that.
Well, cool then. Hopefully they have success with that. And enjoy it. Alright. Anything else to talk about?
Nope. I think that's it. I think I'm ready to move on.
So, I think it's time to talk about...
Smash or Trash!
And we got 2 smashes for you this week.
And these smashes are both... just slightly aged. Think about them like a fine wine.
Or a cheese. Or a fine wine and a fine cheese.
A fine wine and a fine cheese? Like, I don't think that's how that works.
A nicely aged wine and a nicely aged cheese.
I hate you. So the first one. I'll talk about this first one. You can talk about the second one. The first one was by a man whose name I can't pronounce on Kotaku. And this was a really great article. It's about Remember Me's main character, whom is a black woman. And this writer often tackles issues of race in games. And the title of this article is, you know, it doesn't matter that Remember Me's main character is a black woman. And basically the entire article is about how the game does address and accept this woman's cultural heritage, the main character. It never uses that as like a crutch or an excuse for this or that. It's not like Assassin's Creed 3 Liberation, which in a different way was all about racial identity. Instead, Remember Me is about, okay, yeah, no, this character is a black woman, but moving on past that, she's way more than just that. And that is not even an issue within the scope and scale of this story. This story is about other things. And that's like a valuable thing that she's represented this way as a full and true character herself that isn't just a one-note cliche. She's not just like a bad accent. It's not, her racial identity isn't a shortcut for characterization, and this is a good thing. So this article was over on Kotaku, and we're going to link it on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
Why don't you tell us about yours?
Well, I want to highlight an article on usgamer.net, which is the new home of Jeremy Parrish from 1UP. And I have to admit, you know, we kind of called out Parrish and Retronauts last week for the Kickstarter ickiness, but you know, I still have a lot of respect for Parrish. I think that he's a great writer. I do have to admit, though, that when US Gamer launched, I was kind of like, it's missing something. But lately, it's starting to feel more like the sort of thing that Parrish used to deliver. And the first article that really made me feel that way was a write-up called MSX, The Little Hybrid That Could. And, you know, the MSX is a console from 83. I mean, really a personal computer. But, you know, it's just it's a great historical look at it, just kind of highlighting, you know, the history of it, and, you know, Castlevania, a.k.a. Vampire Killer, Akumoju, Dracula, and Metal Gear kind of had their definitive versions, if I'm correct, on the MSX. So, you know, just kind of an interesting history of you know, a console that a lot of gamers maybe are somewhat familiar with, but maybe not, might not know all the full history, you know, including the fact that Microsoft was involved in that. So, it's the MSX box. So, you know, it's just, I always just find these vintage gaming history profiles really well done. And he actually, since then, he's also done a series on the other ones that launched in 83, which were Family Computer from Nintendo, a.k.a. Famicom, a.k.a. what would become the NES, and is it the SG-1000 that launched contemporaneously with that? So, if you are a retro gaming enthusiast, and we mean really retro, then you should go check this out. And yes, it was the SG-1000. I just wasn't 100% sure.
Excellent.
But now I'm 1,000% sure.
Oh, very good. You sound very positive.
All right, then. Well, you know something that I'm very positive about is our social links.
Yay, social links. Yay.
Yay. We had a question of the week. The question of the week was...
This week...
Oh, I thought I was going to do it.
I'm going to read the question. You can read the answer.
I thought I usually did both.
You normally do, but I'm going to...
Okay, fine.
This week, we're talking about the Ouya. Got one? What's your take on it? If not, is there a particular sticking point for you?
And we got a response from none other than Renee from the Koopa Club podcast.
Thank you, Renee.
He commented over on our Facebook. And it was a really thorough response. I don't have an Ouya, but I'm keeping my close eye on it. Initially, there hasn't been any breakthrough games on the console, but the unbridled and immense potential is there. Many games are available as a demo. Every game has a somewhat of a... Yep. And like we mentioned. And then you can upgrade to the full game if you enjoy it that much. Yeah, definitely. My only concern is that there isn't a total standout game that could possibly develop the main franchise for the system. Also, if the Ouya was able to obtain a major third-party developer, that would definitely secure its place in the console wars. And again, we kind of addressed that during our discussion.
Yeah.
I don't really know that it needs a, like, flagship title or a mascot.
Well, but I think that Renee makes a really valid point that having a flagship would obviously make this a way easier conversation to have.
Uh-huh.
You know, I spent, like, 45 minutes basically just to say, oh, I love the Ouya because it's indie supportive, it's indie supported, it is super indie. It would be great if I could just say, bam, like, oh, this one game, like, oh, that's a console seller, like, this is something that you have to buy a new device just to play because it's that good. I cannot make that statement for Polarity. I cannot make that statement
for Towerfall.
Don't get me wrong. I believe anyone who does buy this box will play these games and then feel like, oh, okay, no, these experiences are great. It was worth it.
I feel like what
but
it
they
really
don't,
needs...
It doesn't have, like, the wow factor that would be really useful for the Ouya to have.
Is, like, something along the lines of Journey. And not in terms of, like, oh, a Journey clone, but
no,
just...
No, but that level of like, experience. You say Journey and everyone just understands, like, it's practically shorthand for, like, a classic, classy art game that has something to say. Like,
yep.
Like, it just, it's shorthand for a quality game. So, yeah, no, the Ouya could definitely use that. I'm a little less concerned about the third-party note, although certainly I do, again, agree that for the masses, certainly having Square Enix say, oh, we're making an exclusive Final Fantasy spinoff for Ouya, not that I believe that would happen, but if it happened, certainly that would be a console seller. So,
yeah,
it would certainly be a good thing, and it would, I think the word that Renee used, or phrase Renee used, was secure its place in the console wars.
Yeah, and,
it
know, that's would. A, and that's an interesting
I just don't know
point.
That the console wars are necessarily something the Ouya is interested in competing.
That's true, but I mean, you have to wonder the scope of the Ouya companies, you know, what they want the audience to be. I mean, presumably they
well,
want everyone
they
to have...
everyone yeah. and everything.
And let's be real, context, and let's be real, they really will need a killer app.
Oh, killer absolutely. Franchise. Oh, absolutely. And as I just mean specifically with regard to the securing its place in the console wars, competing with Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft... In that regard, I don't think it needs to, because I think it already has a place in the console
yeah.
wars. This is the $99 alternative that you play when you don't want to deal with that AAA bullshit, and you just want to play
yep.
some fun games that dudes in their garages that love making games made.
Yeah.
That, to me, is the Ouya, and that is already, for me, a thing worth having.
Excellent. So, thank you again, Renee, for your thoughtful feedback to our question of the week.
Yeah, that was really great feedback.
Yeah, and now on to our general feedback. You know, I have to say that in all the excitement of last episode... And
yeah, our big return to proper full-length episodes.
I missed a comment over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
From GameBuoy listener Osfer.
Oh, hell go, here come.
He said, in the beginning of the episode, Captain Handsome McSpikey apologized for being too negative in his view of Microsoft in the previous episode. And to that I say, no, but real talk, girl, you have a right to your opinions, and anyone who has a problem with them can tweet their own without keeping you from voicing yours.
Okay, I'm going to respond to the first half of this message right now. Because Osper, thank you so much. That is actually a really nice thing to say, and I really appreciate that. And I just want to clarify, I'm less concerned with people who were upset with me speaking bad things about Microsoft, because I'm actually perfectly fine with saying bad things about Microsoft, or anyone that I think makes poor choices and is destructive to the industry. You know, obviously I talk about the industry so much because I love games. I love gaming. And I think that right now Microsoft is in a potentially very destructive place. So, you know, sort of specific to that episode. I'm actually okay with people calling me out for that. And I'm not going to listen to them. Like, I'm going to keep on keeping on being negative. The thing that I really felt like I had to step back and address was how destructive I was in the way that I was communicating.
Well, I mean, that was...
I think it was appropriate for me, and I'm not going to say otherwise, it was appropriate for me to be outraged and talk negative. It was less appropriate for me to call them shit sacks or whatever I called them.
And, you know, that's kind of what caused me to reflect on my Ouya outlash last time.
That having been said, Osfer, thank you so much. You make me turn, like, beet red all the time. But you said a super nice thing and a really constructive thing, and I appreciate your support.
Speaking of making you turn beet red, also, I am so happy that I made Spike get all red in the face. Mission accomplished. Except for now, the next mission is to get me to lull him to sleep with his sexy voice in his bed. Love you guys!
Really red. Thank you?
We got a comment on episode 31, our Kickstarter episode, Clerical Error 404, also known as Renee from Koopa Club, over on GameBuie.org said in
GameBuie.org.
In regards to Don Matrick, Bazinga. I took that to a Big Bang Theory place, and
Okay, see, I was reading it as, like, by Zynga. Like, what? He's going to Zynga. Okay, I get it now.
But...
I'm sorry, I'm so flustered from that message earlier. Like, I'm literally, like, fanning myself. Like,
so, Bazinga. Honestly, clever pun, but it made me think of Big Bang Theory, which I just can't handle. Sorry, boo. Over on Twitter, we got a tweet from Virtual Phil, a.k.a. Phil, from Koopa Club Podcast.
I think you skipped one.
Nope. I didn't. He said, kill all the Kickstarters, please. And then, Jeremy Johnson from the Koopa Club.
It's displaying weird on my side. But
it is.
Okay, continue.
It's formatting issues with our show notes. Jeremy Johnson, a.k.a. Twitter user Fixtureface, a.k.a. Jeremy from the Koopa Club podcast, said, I suppose now is a bad time to announce the QK Kickstart Ian's Butt Kickstarter.
What are we kickstarting Ian's butt to do?
Is that like a kick his butt or like kickstarting his butt? Like kickstart my heart, but kickstart my butt?
Stop.
My butt. My hole is ready.
Did you? What?
Well, they should go and listen to... Well, we got a shout-out in a little bit, so... Let's start by saying thank you for your feedback. And we love your feedback.
No, I really want to take a moment and just to set aside and just say thank you so much to all of our listeners out there for your feedback. You know, I often say that I would do this show even if I was alone without internet access in a cave and just... podcasting into a rock because I enjoy podcasting so much, but getting all of this quality feedback and all of this these positive words really make it a lot easier to keep on keeping on and doing this show and bringing content to you guys. So thank you so much for being so awesome and for giving us feedback. We really appreciate it. Continue.
Like I was saying, we love your feedback.
Yeah, we really love your feedback. I dig feedback, man.
We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews.
Yeah, we love your reviews. So please, if you like us, go on iTunes and review us and tell people why they should be listening
iTunes.
To us.
iTunes.
What, did I not say iTunes?
No, I was just saying that, like, GameBuie.org. iTunes.
No, they don't deserve that.
Gasp. We like your Facebook likes, and we fucking love Twitter.
No, seriously, man, we tweet so much. Like I tweet like basically 20 times a day.
I'm surprised it's you're bad. Not tweeting right now.
Yeah, no, this is probably the first episode we've ever done where I didn't tweet at least once during the episode.
We like to tumble on Tumblr, and we would like you to plus one us on Google Plus, which I understand they are starting to roll out like friendly profile names, but it's on a. Like, you know, like, it's not like a universally rolled out thing, you know, it's certain users get it. And
it's
we don't
in,
have,
like, beta or whatever?
And we don't have one yet, so you'll just have to go over to GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
And if you look on the sidebar, or if you're on your mobile phone, you can look on the menu at the top on Game Buoy Mobile.
Game Buoy Mobile.
So either on the menu or on GameBuoy.org's sidebar, there are our social links, which have the links to all of these, including our emails. You can email us. I don't think we've ever had an email before, but that's because we have so much great interaction on other social medias. And let's be real, email is kind of something that a lot of people don't do these days. So, but if you want to email us, hey.
Yeah, no, if you email us, that'd be great. Like maybe, you know, one of these weeks we have a question of the week that is just, you have too big of an answer for Twitter or Facebook, then
email
us.
Which is totally a good point. I don't think we've ever really said, hey, if you've got a really lengthy answer to your question of the week, or just feedback or whatever, and want to say hi, email us.
I think that we will include
in the words
that
of Britney Spears,
question of the week.
In the words of Britney Spears, circa 1998, everybody's doing the emails these days.
I don't really have anything to say about that.
But you do have some shout-outs for our buddies out on the interwebs.
I do. As ever and always, my first shout-out goes to Koopa Club. That is Koopa with a Q and Club with a K. If you like what we do, then you really need to check these guys out. They're great, and they do a fairly similar show to us. They're probably better than us, but, you know, I mean, they're still pretty rad.
I had the honor and pleasure of being on their most recent episode as of this recording, and we had a lot of fun. It was a very light, fluffy, and fun episode, and I had a blast. It's a little raunchy, so, you know. But let's be real. If you're listening to Game Buoy, you're probably not that easily offended. And if you are, sorry about it.
I was just going to say, I wonder how many people we have made clutch their pearls. So that was, what, Koopa Club episode 26 you
yep.
were on?
Yes.
And I believe the title of that episode is, Did I Say Circular Meat Treat?
Yep. I'll let you listen for the surprise and pleasure of what that reference is.
Is it a penis?
No, it's not even anything naughty. Oh, I guess it kind of ruined some of the excitement, huh? But no, it's a lot of fun, so go check it out.
Of course, as ever and always, we want to shout out to the wonderful Orange Lounge Radio, OLR for short, with your host, Rob Roberts, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom we here at Game Buoy steal ever so many of our cues. You can hear them over on the Voice of Geeks Network, or
VOG Geeks Network.
For short.
VOG for short.
They don't get that either.
That is for Game Buoy. Wow.
Game Buoy.
That is for Game Buoy, okay.
That is for GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Perfect. How about you? Who would you like to shout out?
Well, we've got a shout out to Game Bar.
I want to take it to a game bar.
The podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary. Also, Horde House. The place for online gaming, but never too seriously. Of course, we will be appearing with them in just a matter of weeks at the Gamer X convention at the Podcast Crosszone panel. You will also be able to... Oh, I don't know where I was going with that. you will also be able to access Horde House on the Voice of Geeks Network, along with Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. If you like dude bros, then you need to check out the Nerdgasm Network, the wildest 18 hours of shock video game radio you'll ever come across. You know, I always make the joke about their time, but let's be real, Game Buoy's typically pushing 2-3 hours at this point. So, you know, go check them out. They do live shows. It's a lot of fun. I'm overdue for jumping in on that gravy train. So I should go visit them in the internet land. And last but certainly not least, Video Game Outsiders, the podcast about video gaming from the average player's perspective. And with that,
yeah, thank you so much for listening. We definitely appreciate you sticking with us through these fairly long episodes that we've gotten into the habit of doing. We should be back at you in a few weeks with a very special episode that I'm very excited about, though, you know, fingers crossed that I didn't just jinx it.
It's an after-school special.
Oh my god, Slagkick's addicted to meth.
That's not funny, we don't joke about that. Not even once.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. As always, thank you for listening, keep thinking, keep gaming. And I totally didn't look up any anime episode titles to quote to you right now, so, you know, just...
Both of you, dance like you want to win!
Well played.
So if you are a retro gaming enthusiast, and we mean really retro, then you should go check this out.
Check it out. Check it out.
Yes, that's exactly what I like how, like, only part of that was even, like, melodically accurate.